Thinking your chronic back pain was caused by an old sports injury? You could be painfully wrong. It might be an inflammatory condition called ankylosing spondylitis, or AS. Stay tuned, because later in the show, we'll tell you more. This message is brought to you by AbbVie.
Welcome to the Roughing the Passer podcast. Will Brinson, Pete Prisco for a Tuesday show. We got a special guest coming up. Dak Prescott, Cowboys quarterback, joins us to reveal many secrets, Pete. Perhaps how he's succeeding so well, what he thinks about Tony Romo, and who considered drafting him. It's actually a really good interview. I was pleased with Dak, because I think the most interesting thing to me is that he's handling this with the aplomb of a veteran.
He's a good player, man. I mean, look, and he plays with a little bit of a cockiness and a swagger, but he's not, you know, it's not off-putting, you know. He's good. I mean, yeah. I mean, I'll be honest with you. Everybody keeps wondering about the controversy. Yeah, it's a controversy. But the underlying theme of the whole thing is they got their quarterback of the future.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think I've been trying to say this, and I don't think it's – I think I need to write it down just to make it more clear and do a post on it. But the thing about the Dak Romo stuff, Jerry Jones has been saying it. He's saying, look, we're in a great situation. We have our quarterback for the future. We have a quarterback in Tony Romo who we love, who we would like to get healthy. And now they can delay this decision as long as they want and let Romo heal more and more. And that's the most sensible thing to do, right?
When Romo's ready to play, plays. That's my belief.
Okay. And I want to get – we'll get into Green Bay and Dallas a little bit more in the podcast. We're gonna touch on some other stuff. We're going to talk about the Monday night game. Reminder, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. If you leave us a comment, if you like the show, that'd be great. You can – you know, don't leave a nasty comment unless you hate us, jerks. I mean, I don't like these people who leave horrible comments. Anyway, my point was
– are people leaving horrible comments?
Somebody said they sound like I'm podcast – somebody said I think I had my mic plugged in the wrong way one day, and somebody said I sounded like I was podcasting from a Port-a-John, so that was funny.
I figured there were a lot of hate ones on there.
So. Yeah, it's hard to leave a comment on iTunes, so some people don't do it. But at any rate, did what you saw from Dak Prescott in beating the Packers in Green Bay, did that change your mind about what you think the Cowboys should do?
No.
So it wasn't enough?
No.
I thought if he went there and won, it would be enough.
No, I said it might be enough. He also turned the ball over a couple times, too. If Romo has that exact same game, everybody's all over him.
Do you think so?
Yes.
People are yelling if Tony Romo plays like that and the Packers and the Cowboys beat the Packers?
Well, they'd still be all over. They say get Prescott. If it was the reverse, Romo would be taking the grief for the two turnovers rather than the three touchdown passes. Look, he's got a bunch of skill set, but he's not better than Tony Romo, okay? He's just not. He's not a better passer. He's not a better quarterback than Tony Romo yet. He might be down the road, but he isn't right now. And so if you got to ask yourself, which of those – I always say this. Which of those five games, with everything this way it played out, with Ezekiel Elliott running wild, with the defense playing much better, which of those five games would Tony Romo have not won?
He would have won them all.
Right. So who's a better passer? Who's a better quarterback? Romo.
Yeah. I mean, Romo gives them a
– if he's healthy. If he's not healthy, then you can't rush him in there.
Right. No, I agree. I mean, I just think that if Dak's playing well, there is a mojo factor here, though, right? I mean, like, here's the other thing that bothers me about the possibility is, so if you look at the Cowboys' schedule, and I'm just saying this as a hypothetical, like, let's say Tony Romo's not ready to go after the bye. Well, they get the Eagles and the Browns after the bye. And then they get the Steelers, Ravens, Redskins, and Vikings. I mean, what if you push this Romo thing back and you got to play at the Steelers, or that's when his first game is, or his first game is December 1st at the Vikings? I mean, you're setting him up for failure then. I mean, this is the prime spot to start to bring Tony Romo back is right after the bye or against the Browns the week after that.
Right. Look, whoever you're playing, he's the better quarterback. It's not complicated. They've run the ball really well. He would have been fine with that too. And everybody says, well, they run the ball. I was arguing with Brady Quinn. Brady says, oh, they run the ball because, you know, the threat of Dak Prescott to run has helped open things up.
They're not running with Dak Prescott.
No, but there is a threat there that Romo doesn't provide to you, but there's also a better passer on the field, which helped loosen up the run game too. Look, they're running because the offensive line is fantastic. That's why they're running.
If you were doing a draft of offensive linemen, how many of the Cowboys offensive linemen would go in your top five? Like you start, like you've got
three.
So you think
in the top five, two.
And then top 10, three?
Top 15, top 20, yes, for sure.
So Martin and Tyron Smith are
guaranteed. Martin's the best offensive lineman in the league this year.
Where's Tyron Smith?
He's close, but he's been dinged up a little bit. Remember, he missed time. So when he's healthy, he's arguably the best left.
Okay,
time.
What about if you're picking at position? Like you got to pick.
I would take Zach Martin one. I would probably take Tyron Smith one, and I would. Although but his youth and everything else combined with all that.
Sure.
But and then Frederick would probably be one or two or three center.
Okay. That's good. That's pretty good. And they're running the ball really
and
effectively.
Ronald Leary's playing good since he came in for Lyle Collins.
Do you think that Zeke Elliott would be having this success on another team?
No.
Do you think that another running back would be having this success
not
with
this
the Cowboys?
Much. No, he's good. He doesn't, you know what he doesn't do? He doesn't give you body to hit.
Yeah, he moves. He's
one of those gliders and you don't get clean shots on him. He's tough. He's a good back. I still would have taken him fourth overall, but he's a good back.
Yeah, he's really good. I would have taken him fourth overall. The Cowboys did. Looks like a good decision right now. Okay, so Monday night.
We'll see how many titles that back wins down going on. You know, just as many as Adrian Peterson has won in his career, like none.
I mean, if they win the division and they get to the if they win the division this year, then it was a good pick.
If they win a division this year, no. No, fourth overall is not a good pick to win a division. You pick fourth overall to try and win titles.
Well, I mean, but the playoffs are a crapshoot. If you win the division, you're giving yourself a shot with a guy who can run. You know what they need to do?
Best pick of this draft has been Dak Prescott. It's not Ezekiel Elliott.
That's fair. Dak Prescott told me, and we'll hear that interview shortly, that he would actually pick Zeke Elliott for Rookie of the Year, but that's probably him being nice.
He's in deep down, and put him on a lie detector test to go,
The one thing the Cowboys need to do, in my opinion, and I think Bill Barnwell also pointed this out at ESPN, but they need to give Alfred Morris some fourth quarter carries. Zeke Elliott doesn't need these carries when they're up by 15 points or 9 points or more. You know, like if you're up two scores, let rest Zeke. Cause this guy, I mean, he could break Eric Dickerson's rookie record for rushing yards. And he needs to be healthy for the playoffs. And you can't be running him 30 times a game.
Yeah, I agree with you. Can't, you know, these guys get so beat up, Will. I mean, you know, it's a violent game. Why bother with taking all those carries away? You know what I mean? It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, especially when you have Alfred Morris, a capable running back who you can plug in late.
You only have so many carries in that body. I mean, that's the reality of it.
And he's on a rookie deal. Save the kid. So the Jets and the Cardinals played on Monday night, and it was ugly. Ryan Fitzpatrick, I think he had one drive of more than 25 yards in the first 10
He's awful.
Drives. They got a field goal. He finally got in the red zone, and he threw a horrible interception. And then they went to Geno Smith. And now Todd Bowles is saying they're going to go back to Ryan Fitzpatrick. The Jets season is done, right?
The Jets are finished. Why not play the kid? Play Geno, find out what he is or whatever. Okay. Look, I said it before the season. Why would you? Remember, everybody's getting all of ours. Oh, they got to re-sign Fitzpatrick. He's terrible. Everybody, these kind of quarterbacks have these aberration seasons that nothing but tease the fan base and tease the media who think they're good. We've seen it plenty of times. Josh McCown, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Ryan Hoyer right now, and plenty of other times. I mean, the same. They're all the same guy. They're teases. They'll have a 3 or 4 game span or a 2 or 3 game span or maybe even the year like Fitzpatrick had last year. And then they become who they are. And who they are is backups. That's what they are. They're backup quarterbacks in the National Football League, and they should be.
Well, this is true. Ryan Fitzpatrick is not very good. Would you try and play Christian Hackenberg or Bryce Petty? Or do you just get – I mean, because Geno – the thing with Geno is I think is – I mean, isn't his contract up? I mean, do you just like give him some run and just see if he's the guy? I mean, why not, right?
Well, we don't know where Hackenberg is. That's the problem.
Like, literally, we don't know where he is. He could be in Alaska or Hawaii.
No, he's there. He was on the sideline last night. We don't know where he is in terms of does he get any reps? Does he know the game? Is he mentally – because if he knows the game and he's ready to go in and play, I'd play him. You drafted him in the second round. You got to find out who he is. I wouldn't do that until late in the season, but I'd find out you know, me personally, if you drafted the kid in the second round, you clearly think he can play. So find out if he can play. But then there's the old, well, the GM would want to find him to find out if he can play. But the coach, he can't lose that locker room and put a young kid in there. That locker room's lost. They're done. They're finished. They're over.
They're 1-5. I mean, it's over. It's right. You can't win the division because you got the Patriots there and you've got the Bills who
they'll win this week against the Ravens. Just to put that out there.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. I could see that. I think the Ravens are a pick at the Jets as the early line.
Back to back road games for the Ravens in the same building.
The Ravens might not be very good, Pete.
Oh, they're not. That's why they're going to win.
Oh no, but we'll get to them in a second. Is David Johnson the best running back in football?
Right now, he is.
Would you for the rest of the year? Would you
take? And what round did he come in? Oh, round 3.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, but let's not forget. Look, hey, Steve Keim. And the Cardinals, really good at drafting, really good at acquiring veterans. They wanted Amir Abdullah.
You get him in the third round.
They wanted Abdullah in the second.
You don't need to. What's that?
They wanted Abdullah in the second. You know that you saw that Amazon thing, right?
Yeah. So what? They got the running back in the third round.
Sometimes it's better to be lucky than good, right?
Yeah, but they look. The bottom line is, and way back in the day. I know this for a fact. Steve Keim wanted Adrian Peterson and the guy.
Levi Brown.
Yeah.
Not a good choice.
So, yeah, but look, there are special running backs you could take in the first round. I just wouldn't take him. Not the way the game is played today. Even when Adrian Peterson came out, the game was different back then. Now it's a pass first league.
Well, and I think the thing, too, is that David Johnson. Nobody, you know, Northern Iowa played some receiver. You didn't know if he could be he can do it all. He's fast. He's strong. He can run between the tackles. He's explosive. He can catch the ball. He's a pretty decent pass ball. I mean, the kid just quickly matured into one of the best backs in the league.
He's the day I was there last summer or two when he was a rookie 2 summers ago. Wasn't that 2 summers ago? That was last year.
Yeah, he was a rookie last year. This is his second year.
Yeah. Last year, I
you call, by the way, I'll give you credit for this because you called it before the season.
Yeah,
and
I was there and I was watching him and I was talking to those guys. Their guy, watch this kid. He was gliding and then he pulled up. I was there the day he pulled up. He pulled a hamstring early in camp and it kind of, not pulled it, but tweaked it. And he couldn't get going and it kind of slowed him early on. But he had big play. I mean, he's a glider. He's when he gets going, he kind of looks a little like Marcus Allen. I mean, he's a bigger. He's big. He's a physical kid. And he can catch the ball out of the backfield. I mean, they started out slow, but they're getting it going now.
Well, that was my next question. Do the Cardinals look "quote unquote" back to you because they're not? You know, they're not. They're 3-3, isn't that right? They're 3-3, and they got Seattle on Sunday night. But I thought the thing that was most important to me, Carson Palmer, kind of had a hamstring injury, Bruce Arians said it wasn't that big a deal, but the Cardinals. Yeah, 3-3, 2 games back at the Seahawks, who they play on Sunday night, tied with the Rams right now. That's hilarious. Carson Palmer looked a lot better in the second half of that game on Monday night. A lot better than he did in the he looked. He was missing throws in the first half. And then the second half started to get John Brown a little bit more involved.
They blitzed the heck out of him and they pressured him.
But you kind of had to see that coming. You're playing Todd Bowles. He's your old defensive coordinator.
I'm concerned about their offensive line a little bit. You know, they haven't played that well. Although, Humphreys did a nice job last night, it looked like, at right tackle. So it'll be interesting. But, you know, with Seattle, you got to worry about Bennett. You got to worry about Cliff Averill. You got to worry about when they go to that motor package that they have and they put Bennett inside and Frank Clark comes inside and then they put Cassius Marsh and Averill on the outside. I mean, they get after it. But I think Atlanta might have showed.
Hold on. We're gonna talk about Atlanta and Seattle. But first, we got to pause for a very quick commercial break.
Hey, sports fans, if you're like me, you love a pickup basketball game or a round of golf with your friends. And maybe you thought an awkward jump shot or a few ugly swings were causing your chronic back pain. Truth is, you could be painfully wrong. Because if your back pain started before age 40 and has lasted longer than 3 months, it could point to an inflammatory condition called ankylosing spondylitis, or AS. To learn if your symptoms could signal AS, take a short quiz at asbackpainquiz.com. Then talk to your doctor. Find out if you could be painfully wrong. This message is brought to you by AbbVie.
Okay, so Atlanta-Seattle, we were talking before the podcast. You just finished watching the Atlanta-Seattle film. What did Atlanta show you? because fantastic job by Dan Quinn and company to kind of adjust. Their third quarter was tremendous. Matt Ryan looked great. Julio Jones looked great. What did they show you that might open up a window into how Arizona can beat Seattle?
Well, I'm a big believer in, you know, when like in some of those, they were busts. I mean, Seattle busted a bunch. I mean, and you could get them to bust a bunch. And I'll give you an example. The Toyolo touchdown, they lined him up inside on the slot and ran him to the outside and up. And on the same play, Julio Jones was on the left, and he ran a crosser, and Sherman went with him. So it looked to me like Sherman was in man-to-man, and the deep safety went to there were two guys in the slot. He went to the inside guy instead of the second guy. He should have had two instead of one, and he busted. And I think if you run some concepts, and now it takes time because they're hard to block, but if you can get those, you know, kind of concepts in there where you cross a guy and run a guy back underneath and flood the zone and everything, you're going to have guys open. The problem with it, which is why it's so hard to do against them, and I always hear this Legion of Boom stuff, and those guys are good players, particularly Earl Thomas and Sherman, and Shed, or however you say his name, is playing really well too. The problem is you can't block them. Those guys, Michael Bennett is a beast, and Cliff Averill can rush the passer, and Frank Clark's a damn good player, and Cassius Marsh can put his hand on the ground and get after it at times too. I mean, and now you're getting Jerron Reed in the middle starting to get some push. So the problem is blocking them. It's not so much attacking them. So if Arizona's offensive line can protect, and that's a big if, they're going to have chances to make plays down the field. And they've run a lot of these. You know, I go back to a game a couple years ago where they got John Brown in motion from right side to the left, motion from the left side to the right side, settled in, let the guy clear out in front of him and came underneath. And then as he's coming across, instead of crossing the field, he turned up and he was wide open for a big play. Those are the kind of things you have to do. The problem is they take time.
I mean – and that's sort of the thing that Bruce Arians – I mean, do you think Bruce Arians is capable of adjusting? I mean, he's clearly capable of it. Is he not stubborn enough to adjust his game plan to kind of quick strike this stuff and not take those shots downfield?
No, I think the shots are there if you could just, you know, protect them. You know, you got to protect them. It's, you know, you slide your protection to where Bennett is, or double him or whatever, and then let the other guys go one-on-one. Bennett's the key. Bennett makes that whole thing go up front. He's violent. He plays nasty.
Is there a better player against a run than Michael Bennett?
There's better players against a run, but, right. but he's good all the way around.
Oh, I know he is, but I mean, like, you see him, and he just sniffs out run plays.
He's so explosive, but he's real. I mean, you can use his aggressiveness against them too. He made a great play the other day on a run where he tackled Freeman for like a 2-yard, 3-yard loss or something.
Is that the one where he was like off the line, like before? He was in the backfield before it snapped.
Yeah, when Schrader couldn't get to him right away.
Yeah.
But use that against him. You know, let him go up the field and then kick him out and go inside of him and run. I mean, because he does do that. But he's a big physical man, and he's tough, and he plays violent. He's a hell of a football player. And you know who else is having a great, 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 great year on that defense? Bobby Wagner. Bobby Wagner is playing phenomenal football. I mean, outstanding football. He's always been good, but he might be having his best year.
Okay, I want to ask you about Thursday night's game. So there is a quarterback in this game who is, over his last 12 starts, 63.4 completion percentage, 262 yards per game, 20 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, and a 94.1 passer rating. And there's another quarterback in this game over his last 12 starts with a 58.6% completion rating. That's worse than the first guy. 226.8 passing yards per game, worse than the first guy. 20 touchdowns, same. 9 interceptions, more. 83.3 passer rating, lower than the first guy. Which guy is?
I know who you're. It's Hoyer the stiff against Rodgers the star.
That's right. Yeah. What's up with that, Pete? How?
Well, first off,
why is Brian Hoyer better than Aaron Rodgers?
Not better than Aaron Rodgers. Don't be caught up in that. Johnny come lately, statistics, twist them, media mentality, which is out there on Twitter. Please don't get caught up in that. I don't want you to fall victim to that. I know
you're saying. Are you saying that our friend Mike Garofalo is a Johnny come lately?
No, he just tweeted out the stats.
I know.
He's not. Nobody in their right mind would think Brian Hoyer was better than Aaron Rodgers, which is why stats are twisted and misleading.
Okay. I don't think that either. I mean, he has been better statistically. So instead of talking about the difference between the two. And the fact that Brian Hoyer is a journeyman, I want you to tell me what is wrong with Aaron Rodgers.
Holding the ball. And there's a reason he's holding the ball. And I go back to last year. I did a thing on it last year. their offense is outdated and archaic. It's they run all ISO routes, and I wrote that note last week. Of the pass plays they had last week against the Giants, five times receivers crossed each other in the field. Five times.
That's it?
That should never happen. You know, and I'm watching Seattle, and everybody gives Russell Wilson all kinds of credit. And yeah, Russell Wilson does some good things. But Seattle does some great things with the way they run their picks and rubs and switch routes and everything else to create open areas and get guys open. If it's man, they get them open. They pick them at the line of scrimmage. They feast on that switch route from the outside receiver, switching with the inside receiver and throwing vertical to the inside receiver. I mean, they kill that. Then they switch and they rub and everything else. They bunch. The Packers do none of that. None of it.
Is it – I mean, I think you're 100% right. Is it also a problem – because the statistics show that Aaron Rodgers has got plenty of time in the pocket. But do you think that there's sort of this cascading issue where because they're running these isolation routes with – and they're running it with Randall Cobb and Jordy Nelson.
They don't get open. They don't get –
I mean, Jordy Nelson's coming off an ACL and Randall Cobb is a guy that needs to be schemed open. Do you think it's because of that and because he's holding it too long and now he's starting to try and improvise plays too often?
Right.
Is that what's
right.
happening?
He's not trusting his eyes because they're not getting open. And when they don't get open, then he starts moving around and getting jumpy and trying to create plays where they get outside the pocket and they get into scramble drills and try and make big plays that way. They can blame Rodgers all you want. Rodgers still has the big arm. Rodgers isn't playing as well because the guys aren't getting open and the scheme stinks.
How do you explain the throw? And I'm not, I mean, sometimes you make bad throws, but the throw to Randall Cobb, that was a total miss.
That was a bad throw.
Right.
I mean, he just missed it. He missed the throw. He missed the throw. That one's not as concerning to me as the one where he threw into the stomach of Barry Church.
That was horrible.
He didn't see him. I mean, that one's concerning to me more so than the missed throw because guys miss throws all the time. But I'll go back to
Aaron Rodgers, when he's playing at his peak, Aaron Rodgers does not miss that throw to Randall Cobb.
I'll go back the week before. When they played the Giants, they had a 17-yard completion to Jordy Nelson. They motioned him from left to right, had him settle behind the tight end. The tight end cleared out. He ran underneath him. It was a simple crosser. He was wide open. He made it a 17-yard gain. They don't do enough of that.
We see this, and I think a lot of people are seeing this, that there are scheme issues. Why in the hell would Mike McCarthy not be doing it? Like, just stick some rub routes in there, stick some picks in there, get some guys open, scheme Randall Cobb open, and just dink and dunk to him and get Rodgers some rhythm. You know what I mean? Like,
I agree. I don't know why he doesn't do it. Like, I'll go to the opening three plays of the Seahawks the other day. This is, you know, everybody talks about how great Russell Wilson is, but all right, Russell Wilson pass short left to Jimmy Graham. It was an easy throw. Okay,
yeah,
easy throw. Then he comes back and he short left to Tyler Lockett. He stands up and throws a quick screen to Tyler Lockett. Then the next play is a short right to Jermaine Kearse. 16 yards, quick little throw, nothing major. I mean, they make it so easy.
But I mean, that's the point of coaching, right? Like, make it easy.
Yeah, and nobody's claiming Mr. Bevel's the greatest offensive coordinator in the world either. But I'll give them all kinds of credit, Will. They realize that he can play better, you know, when he's got those receivers spread out. Like, they come out and their first play is three by one. They motion the tight end inside, and he stands up and he throws a quick screen to the tight end or to the receiver. I'm sorry, to Jimmy Graham from the thing.
Yeah.
8 yards, little bang bang, play it out. The second play, I'm just watching it while I do it right here. Second play, they do have two tight ends. He stands up and throws a quick screen to Lockett for 8 yards. Then, which any quarterback in the league can make that throw. And the next one, and this isn't to demean, they're in five spread. He's solo in shotgun. They motion Michael back into the backfield for protection reasons. He stands up, fakes inside, boots to the right, and throws to a guy standing wide open, Kearse, for 16 yards against the zone defense on the right side. Really simple, really easy throws. He gets Wilson into a rhythm. No complications to it, and off they go. Why Green Bay doesn't do that, I have no idea.
So I have this theory too that, and I mean, I don't want to like lead the campaign to fire Mike McCarthy or anything, or to blow up the coaching staff at Green Bay. But remember when Philip Rivers had that horrible 2011 and 2012, and he was just turning the ball over left and right, and he just wasn't playing well, and then they switched it up and got rid of North Turner. and brought in Mike McCoy, who brought in Ken Whisenhunt as his OC, and they ran this new, you know, this stuff that Rivers was not entirely, you know, hadn't been running. You know, it's a different playbook, different scheme. It's like, oh, he's going to struggle to adjust. Except Rivers, I think, almost checked in more mentally. Like, you know, like sometimes you just get stagnant. I mean, you know, sometimes, you know, not for us happily married men, but, you know, sometimes people get bored and they want to try something else, right? I mean, is that a viable theory? Like, Rodgers is bored with what he's been doing, or not bored, but it's stagnant, and he's not having to mentally work.
I think part of it might be he might be a little stubborn too. I think they're both stubborn. That it's worked in the past so well.
So he's like, no, Mike, we don't need to scheme guys open. Dude, Gimpy, Jordy Nelson, and Randall, short stack Randall Cobb. I saw Bob McGinn. I'm curious. Bob McGinn pointed out, he's like, Randall Cobb's not as talented as Cole. He doesn't have all the talent as Cole Beasley. I mean, why just scheme these guys open? It's not that hard.
I agree. They don't run any rub routes. And I can't wait to watch the tape this week to see what the heck went on there, because it looked, you know, I clearly studied last week's tape and I was repulsed by what I saw. They don't rub, they don't pick, they don't do anything. I've said it for years. I've always thought that you can't just run. If you had Randy Moss and Julio Jones split right and left, you could run ISOs all day if you want to, but you don't.
I mean, do you think that 2014 Jordy Nelson, you could, I mean, obviously it worked for him. I mean, does it work?
The game has changed a little bit. Everybody's so fast now. It's you know, it's, guys cover up the ground so much. It's become a coverage game. You know, back then it wasn't as much of a coverage game. It's all, you know, all these, you got fast linebackers and little linebackers and extra DBs that can run, and, you know, corners have moved to free safety, and free safeties move to strong safety. Strong safeties become a linebacker. The linebackers become the down edge rusher. I mean, the game has become air. And so when the game becomes air, even if you have protection, it's hard to get guys open, and he's getting flustered by it.
Do you think they fix it this year, or do they just ride this train?
He's got the perfect tonic coming in with the bad cover corners of the Bears. This is the week.
The Packers are 9-point favorites after losing at home to the Cowboys. That was surprising to me.
The Bears aren't very good, though.
No, the Bears are terrible. And by the way, that
square talky thing. I mean, he gets the ball out of his hands, but he missed the touchdown pass to Alshon Jeffrey. He can't throw the ball down the field at all. I mean, he doesn't drive the ball at all. All you need, you know, you just watch the tape, and it's just dink and dunk and dink and dunk and dink and dunk, and the ball gets out of his hands. It's hard to hit him, so from that standpoint, it's good. But he ain't a winning quarterback. He's just everybody said, oh, he threw for 200 or whatever, 290 the other day. He scored 16 points against Jacksonville. He's not very good.
Don't think that Brian Hoyer Aaron Rodgers comparison isn't going to be on the television at least 15 times between now and Thursday. Aaron Rodgers will. He'll get an eye full of that. So look, maybe you want to go.
Tweet, didn't you like my tweet last night that I sent? I said Ryan Fitzpatrick's going so bad now he's playing like Aaron Rodgers.
I didn't see that. I would have retweeted that if I'd seen it. Yeah. Hey, maybe you, Pete, maybe you want to go to the Thursday night game between the Bears and the Packers. You need some tickets, or maybe you just want to go to an Earth, Wind, Fire concert somewhere around the country. But you need tickets, and the best way to get tickets, SeatGeek. Love SeatGeek as a sponsor because they're an excellent app to use. You download the app and they have this. First of all, they aggregate all the ticket sites into one spot so you get to see the prices. And they have this value button. It's fantastic. Value code. It's like a color code. If it's green, it's a good value. Red, you might want to hold off and not buy it. Yellow, etc. The best thing about SeatGeek is that you get $20 off, courtesy of Roughing the Passer podcast. Our listeners. To get your $20 rebate, download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, enter promo code PASSER. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you made your first ticket purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code PASSER today. There really isn't an easier way to get tickets. If you're not using SeatGeek, you're kind of an idiot. Going to play a quick game and then we'll get out of here. Then we'll get to Dak Prescott after that. I'm sure that he's been loved waiting in the green room for us to finish talking. We'll call it Do You Believe?
Well, he's got Romo waiting in the green room. So.
That's right, yeah. Tony's in the yellow room. Do you believe that the Buffalo Bills can win the AFC East?
No.
Okay, well, you're supposed to follow that up by saying, but I think the Bills are really good.
No, I think the Bills are decent. I don't think they're really good.
Are they, like, if you had to take the over under on wins for the Bills season now, and it was set at 9, over under 9?
Under.
You think they're an 8-8 team?
Yes.
They get Miami this week. Miami,
yeah, but look at the next. You got the schedule in front of you. Look at the next three after that.
It's tough. It's they have a. I think it's the Packers, the Patriots, and the Bengals. Sorry, Bengals, Patriots, Seahawks with a bye squeezed in there.
Where are they? It's Patriots in Buffalo.
Mm-hmm. And the Patriots are going to be pissed off because the Bills skunked them.
Bengals is in Cincinnati, right?
Yeah. Well, it's Patriots in Buffalo, and then Monday night at the Seahawks. That's an L.
And
you're taking that L, and then they get their bye, and then Sunday against the Seahawks, or I mean against the Bengals in Cincinnati.
Yeah, that's three straight right there. Goodbye.
Well, that's what we thought about the Cardinals, you know, when they had to play the Cardinals and the.
Yeah, but that was a different animal. That was a West Coast team going east and playing out there. Now you got first off, you got, you know, road Monday nighter at Seattle. You got New England coming in there with Tom Brady. They beat him with Brissett. That's a different animal. And then you got Cincinnati on the road. We are playing back-to-back road games, even though it's a bye. It's still back-to-back road games. So, yeah, they're going to have trouble this week against Miami. I think they'll win the game, but they're going to have trouble this week.
Miami looked pretty good. Miami looked good against Pittsburgh.
What's the rest of that schedule look like?
Then for the Bills, then they get the Jaguars at home at the Raiders.
That won't be an easy game either for them.
No. Then they close out with a really nice schedule. Three home games in December against the Steelers, Browns, and Dolphins, and then they play at the Jets on New Year's Day.
Yeah, that's a good close. So yeah, but if they could win one of those three games, one of those four games in the middle, starting if they win one of the next four or two of the next four, they might be a playoff team.
It looks like, you know, the AFC West is tough, but I mean, there's just not.
San Diego's the team you got to watch. Like you said that the San Diego should be like 4-2.
God, they should be. They could be 6-0.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and that division is winnable. I don't think San Diego's out of it at all.
No, they're going to have a tough game this week at Atlanta, though.
Yeah, Atlanta. Well, that was a great segue, Pete. Do you believe that the Atlanta Falcons are the best team in the NFC?
No.
Who's better? Well, the Vikings?
Here's what concerns me about the Vikings. Seattle's better.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, that's fine.
Here's what concerns me about the Vikings. They're winning with defense. They're winning with special teams returns. They're winning with defensive touchdowns. And they're winning with some good passes, you know, here and there from Bradford's playing pretty well. But I don't know if the consistency of the offense is there. And I worry about the offensive line. I mean, you know, they signed Jake Long. He might play. You know, there's concern there with that. I think they lose this week at Philly.
Really? The Philly thing is concerning to me. Because they have the Lane Johnson loss was immediately felt. I mean, they gave up five sacks to the Redskins. It was pretty obvious that the rookie whose name I'm not going to attempt to pronounce.
That's not the concern. The concern is on the other side of the ball. They got run on for 230 yards. That all that hype about that Philly defense and the wide nine and attacking up the field. Well, people figured out, yeah, they go running up the field. You can run inside of them. They got gashed last week in the run game.
Mm. So those are, I mean, the Washington Redskins are not a good running team either.
But the Vikings don't run the football.
Maybe they get going this week. They had a bye to sit on it.
I like the Eagles this week. That place will be jumping. Okay. Sam Bradford's going to take a beating. I like the Vikings. The Eagles.
Yeah, Vikings schedule is at Eagles, at Bears, versus Lions, at Redskins, versus Cardinals, at Lions.
Not real tough.
No, but it's four road games. In the next six games. I mean, that's not easy. You know, that's a lot of roads.
Atlanta only has like three more road games, don't they?
Well, Atlanta got hosed by the schedule makers and then came back and almost won both of those games by going at Denver, at Seattle. That's a tough. I mean, you come out. I'm impressed with Atlanta.
Atlanta's getting better on defense.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're not. Matt Ryan's not going to keep up this pace all season, right?
I mean, Matt Ryan's showing people what he really is, though.
He is. Look,
these out there like Mike Freeman who thought Matt Ryan was any good. He was, you know, I saw Mike Silver. I love Mike Silver. If I had any quarterback to pick, I'd take Russell Wilson. Da, 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 da. That's all, okay, from an age standpoint, maybe. But he wasn't the best quarterback on the field Sunday.
No. Matt Ryan's the MVP 6 weeks into the season. It's not. I mean, it shouldn't be a question mark. He's the guy who's been the best player in the NFL and has elevated his team. And I think the thing about Matt Ryan that's so impressive is everybody thought he kind of had a ceiling that he bumped up against, and that just wasn't the case. He's taken it to another level. He's playing really well.
What happened? I mean, nobody said anything about the interception late in the game. That hit Julio Jones in the hand.
No, I think everybody said it at least on Twitter. I mean, that wasn't Matt Ryan's fault.
But it wasn't a great pass, but Julio's got to catch that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the only issue was, and you can go back and forth on this, was should the Falcons have been running the ball with that 1-point lead? And but if you can get the ball into Julio Jones's hands and have a first down coming your way, you take the chances that he's not going to pop the ball up in the air like that. I mean, it's 100% on him. I have no problem with that. I don't blame Matt Ryan for that.
You know, that's the other thing about our Twitterverse, because yesterday was, you know, the Russell Wilson mania went crazy again. Give me a turnover at the midfield down one, and I'm, you know, guys are going to go win that game usually. I mean, they got the ball. What'd they get the ball? The midfield stripe almost?
Yeah. And all you have to do is go and turn and kick a field goal.
And he went.
Oh, what'd you think about the pass interference call, too?
It was a terrible call.
Oh, wait. No, actually, don't answer that.
Wait a second. Okay, here. They got the ball at. I'm trying to see what. I think it was midfield, Will.
Yeah, of course it was.
It was. sorry, I'm
the volume on Pete's Game Pass.
Is, and you know how that pops on right there, and it irritates me. He got the ball at – well, here's that wonderful play he made to Alex Collins, which actually was a really good play. Don't you agree?
The touchdown by Alex Collins?
No, the one where he's blocking and he dumped it off to him.
Oh, yeah. That was good. Let's not run through this film. All right. Do you believe that pass interference should be reviewable?
Oh, by the way, they got the ball real quick. They got the ball to 39.
That's, I mean, you just got to get like 10 yards and you're in field goal range.
Well, that's game-winning drive, but you take it for what it is. Do I think pass interference should be reviewable?
Yes. Do you believe that? Do you believe it should be?
No, I'll tell you what they should do. They should add an eighth official. I've said it all along.
Actually a good idea.
Yeah, the game's too fast for seven guys. It needs an eighth one. They're caught out of position. They can't see it. I think they need to add an eighth official.
Where would you put that eighth official on the field?
That's for them to decide. But put them on the
field. All right. And finally,
like, I grabs if a you know.
I mean, you went and looked at it. Richard Sherman tweeted out a GIF last night, which was hilarious. But it was like of Julio Jones committing what could be called pass interference off the line of scrimmage. But he flat out grabbed him on the last play. It's ridiculous. How do you not? You have to flag that. I don't blame Dan Quinn for going nuts. I mean, I get that you don't want to have a flag come in on a jump ball on fourth down, but the fact that defenses know that just gives them free rein to do what they want and just anticipate no flag being thrown.
Richard Sherman had a bad day, by the way.
He got beat.
Yeah, well, you know, he got beat on a couple of one series. He got beat on an out where he wasn't even in the picture, and then he got beat on the next play on an in where on a crosser where he wasn't where he. Got, you know, didn't make the play.
He was losing his mind on the sideline too.
Yeah, I don't care. Why. He was mad because somebody blamed him on the bus, and I don't think that bus wasn't him. It was the inside guy.
All right. Finally, do you believe that the NFC East is the best division in football?
No.
Which division is better? AFC West?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. I mean, I'm fine with that.
Top to bottom, AFC West is probably the better. You know, San Diego right now is the bottom team. They're not they're better than the Redskins.
Or the Giants. The Redskins would be in the playoffs today if the season ended.
That's just downright scary because they're not any good either.
They played pretty well. They won four straight games.
Against?
I mean, they just beat the Eagles. I don't know what you want. I mean,
I know, but the Giants, I guess, on the road.
I mean, they beat two.
I still don't think that division's that good.
All right, fair enough. The Cowboys look pretty good, though. Speaking of the Cowboys, we have Cowboys quarterback, current starter, perhaps future starter, certainly long-term future starter, Dak Prescott, who is joining us. He's doing some charitable stuff with Buffalo Wild Wings. It's pretty cool. So let's go talk to Dak Prescott. Hey, Dak, how you doing, man?
Doing
well, thanks. How about yourself?
Doing well, how are you?
Not bad. A nice relaxing Monday. Got through the weekend, and I don't get a bye week, but you do. Are you excited about your bye week and where you guys stand, 5-1 heading into a 2-week break? How do you feel like the first part of the season is gone?
It's going great. Feels good to be on a little win streak here heading to the bye week. Allow us to relax, get our feet back underneath us for a long rest of the season. That we're excited to get back and attack the way we've been doing this first part of it.
I don't think a lot of people were confident you guys could roll into Green Bay, into Lambeau Field, and beat the Packers. But, I mean, you know, you did, and you executed in a variety of different ways. How does Lambeau Field compare to playing in SEC stadiums? You know, it's not Is it as loud as cowbells? Louder than cowbells? Less loud than cowbells? What's the toughest stadium you played in? How does it compare with Lambeau?
Lambeau was great. It was a great atmosphere. There were times I had to take the cadence and was screaming at the top of my lungs to do it. So it was a great atmosphere. They've got a good thing going at Lambeau, obviously a historical field, and they bring the juice every game. But it compares. It's like an SEC game. It's one of those towns that just football is everything, and I feel like that's how every school in the SEC is. It ranks right there along with the LSUs and the Auburns.
Do you think playing for multiple years with cowbells behind you has made it easier to deal with the noise that happens at football games?
Yeah, definitely. I'd say so. I mean, cowbells aren't something you normally hear at a football game. So to hear that wrecking sound for 5 years and then going on the road and traveling, playing at LSU, at Bama, at Auburn, it's prepared me for these loud venues here in the NFL.
Man, I tell you what, I'm an NC State guy. I was at the bowl game in Charlotte. I've never heard anything like that. You guys only had like a couple thousand fans, and it was insane. And you did you were pretty good on the field. When you look at goals coming out of the bye, what sort of goals do you set for yourself and for the team moving forward now that you're getting this break?
My goals are all team oriented. Just to make sure I give my team a chance to win each and every week. And as long as we're winning, I don't really care what's happening individually with stats or anything like that. We've got a great offensive line that is just getting the job done in the run game and allowing our passing game to open up. And then playmakers are just making plays down the field. So we just want to keep this juice or this feel that we've got going right now. Keep it rolling into this next part of the season.
Where does Ezekiel Elliott rank in terms of running backs that you've played with in your lifetime?
Definitely first. He's just a freak of nature, a guy that works his butt off each and every day at practice, and then it shows come Sundays. And he had said the same thing. I mean, that offensive line just opens up holes and allows him to just do what he's good at and just run and make plays. But definitely credit to Zeke. He's an outstanding back.
Have you ever played behind an offensive line like the one in Dallas? Because, I mean, you got three first-round picks. And Tyron Smith, Zach Martin, Travis Frederick, all playing. I mean, like, I think if you ask some GMs, say, pick a guard, pick a tackle, pick a center, they might get your guys first on that list. I mean, have you ever played behind a line like that?
Maybe on a video game. but these guys are, and that's exactly what they are. Video game, like, just the way they approach the game, the way they come about it each and every week. They're all just physical freaks that, I mean, as big as they are, they can run, and they're nasty up front. It's definitely a privilege to play behind those guys.
If you had a vote for NFL Rookie of the Year right now, who would you vote for 6 weeks into the season?
Yeah, I'm giving that to Zeke. just what he's done, rushing over 130 yards, I think three or four games straight or whatever it is. He's getting the job done, and he's allowing our offense to be balanced and just open up.
At any point when you're, because like, I don't know if you play golf, but I play golf, and if I'm playing well, I start to get it in my head. When you're playing football and you don't have you have the streak of no interceptions, do you start to think about it at all? And how do you keep that out of your head?
I stay within the play, within the moment. There's a lot that goes into one play, and I just like to focus on that. I don't pay attention to any streaks or any accolades or anything like that, no matter if it's good or bad. I just focus on what's important and what I can control, just try to go out there and execute it the best I can.
When Tony Romo went down in the preseason, did you think that the Cowboys were going to sign a veteran quarterback?
Not really my thought. Just I like to think about the things I can control. I really wasn't worried about that. I just knew it was an opportunity to go in there and take advantage of it and just play the best I could and show those coaches that I can handle everything they throw at me, that I can manage that offense and make some plays, and I've got great guys around me that has been allowing me to do that.
You're really good at quarterback speak, coach speak. That's impressive. But the things you can control? You're coming from Mississippi State. You weren't playing in this pro style offense. I mean, Dan Mullen runs some. I mean, he's a great coach, and the offense was high octane. But you guys ran concepts that are totally different to what you're running now. How hard was that adjustment, and what's been the hardest thing about the adjustment?
I think that's how I misinterpreted. Our passing game in college was pretty much the exact same as it is.
Oh, is it?
In NFL.
All right.
The difference is I go into center sometimes, but that was something I was very fortunate to come in and get the playbook and just looking at the plays and just
being able to connect them to plays that we ran in college, so that worked well for me. But just working from under center, doing things that I wasn't asked to do in college, just a testament to how hard my coaches have been coaching me, Coach Garrett, Coach Lennon, and Coach Wilson, from the time I got here, just planting the things in my head that I need to
focus on getting back away from center and staying balanced within my throws. I've got a great coaching.
Wait, so is the Linehan? So, I mean, it's totally possible I'm wrong. So the Linehan playbook is closer to the Mullen playbook than people think, then?
Yeah, and I actually think there was one point in time when Linehan was in college, Mullen and Urban were together, that they actually met up at one point when Linehan was in Louisville. So maybe that's where it translates or whatever, crosses over, I guess you can say. But yeah, I mean, a lot of our plays now are plays that we ran at Mississippi State.
Okay, so the plays that you guys utilized from the Mississippi State playbook, is that something that the coaches purposely put in there, or is that just convenient into like how that worked out with where you landed?
No, it's just how it worked out with where I landed. I mean, from day one, when I go in the camp as the third string guy, the plays were very similar and alike that we did in college. So it was just, I just lucked up on that half.
Interesting. All right. So let me ask you this then. Were there other teams? You kind of connect the dots. It makes sense that the Cowboys look at you and say, hey, you know, maybe we got these concepts that are similar. You know, obviously a talented kid, big, strong. Were there other teams that you talked to that you thought somebody else was going to draft you before the actual draft happened?
I mean, there were teams that, yeah, you had kind of a feel on that you thought you may end up at. And then after they pass you in a certain round, you're kind of like, well, I don't know about that anymore.
Anybody in particular?
Maybe the Cardinals. I felt like I may have ended up at Arizona a little bit early in the draft or midway through the draft. And then, as I said, once the draft gets later and you get into the fourth round, I mean, you're just like, just somebody pick me now.
But it worked out all right. How do you think about, what do you feel about the people compare this to the 2001 Patriots, you know, with you stepping in? I mean, how do you feel about that comparison? It seems kind of wild, but it isn't that far-fetched, and your numbers are comparable to Brady back in 2001.
Yeah, man, it's not anything I really paid attention to, I guess. The comparisons are outside of what's going on here at the Star in Frisco. We focus on each other and just the team and the great people that we have, and just where we're going. Everybody likes that, and we're trying to stay hungry.
One of the things that I think goes unnoticed because people talk about you, and you look, you've done a great job answering these questions about Tony Romo. And I mean, you've said it before. I assume you still say it. Is this Tony Romo's team, or the Dallas Cowboys Tony Romo's team?
I'm just in right now, just trying to give my team a chance to win week in and week out. And I'll leave those bigger calls of who's playing up to the guys that they get paid to do that. For me, it's just to come in and just win games and give my team a chance.
How is it? Do you talk with Tony a lot one-on-one? And is he served as like a guy? Because I mean, he's a really smart quarterback, really cerebral guy. Has he served as a good mentor in that role?
Definitely. I mean, he's another coach that I'm fortunate to have basically on the sideline. He's always helping me out, giving me positive feedback, telling me things that he saw that could help me on the upcoming driver throughout the game.
All right. Yeah. All right. So with the Buffalo Wild Wings thing, you're doing some work with the Girls and Boys Club, which I think is really cool because this is not just another sponsor thing. Can you tell us a little bit about what you did and the video that was produced?
I was able to get Buffalo Wild Wings, who partnered up with the Boys and Girls Club of Grand Prairie, Texas. And they went and renovated a field out there, adding some new bleachers and a scoreboard. And I was just able to go out there, grab some fans from the Buffalo Wild Wings, and bring them back to the Boys and Girls Club. And we ran a couple of games and just gave those kids kind of a taste of what it's like to play in front of fans, and what I do every week on Sunday. So it was great. It was an amazing thing to get into. And everybody can help just by donating $1 throughout the month of October to Buffalo Wild Wings to help support the Boys and Girls Club.
That's cool, man. They go to buffalowildwings.com/giving. Dak, thank you so much for your time. Really impressed with your play this season, and you remain cool under pressure, my friend. Thanks a lot.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it. Thank you for having me on.